Ken Labert is with us today, and we know the finalists now of Super Rugby, and there'll be many pleased about it. I don't know about you. Perhaps you wanted that Wellington-based mob to get up. But, you know, some unkind social commentators are referring to the Hurricanes perhaps as a light breeze now. But we know that the Chiefs and the Blues are going to do battle for the big title. That'll please many, but not Wellingtonians, perhaps. Ken, how whakaro, what are you thinking about it all, mate?
Well, you know, when you get, you know, well, firstly, social media, you know, what do they say? Opinions are like backsides. Everybody's got one. And in the world of social media and 24/7 digital and internet access, it is what it is when it comes to people making comments. That being said, there weren't too many people outside of the Hurricanes' loyal fan base that would have predicted that the Hurricanes would have got through to the last four, and they certainly had their chances. They've had a few setbacks along the way, as has every other Super Rugby. But I think they will be very happy with what they achieved in 2024. They won't be satisfied, obviously. They would have liked to have lasted another week. But right from the get-go in the competition, everybody's been talking about the Chiefs as the benchmark team. They fell on some touchy times as well during the course of the regular season. In the quarterfinal game last week, they led 31-0 at halftime, and after 20 minutes in the semi-final against the Hurricanes, they had jumped out, I think, to 17-0. Against the team that came top in the regular season. So I think in the last 2 weeks, what we have seen from the Chiefs is a very strong public signal that they are in form at the right time of the year, and they will be ready to go in the final on Saturday. There'll be a couple of players in particular, in my view, that we need to take note of. One is Cortez Ratima. This kid who's been playing nine inside Damian McKenzie. He's had a bit of a contest for that nine jersey early on, but he has been terrific in 2024. An unintended consequence, I guess, of his selection would have been Clayton McMillan picking him as a kid with a lot of potential. Let's see what he can do. And now, in my view, he's been the best number nine halfback in Super Rugby out of the New Zealand franchises by a long shot, and in my view he's going to be poised to be included in that All Black group when it comes out in the next week or so. And of course young Wallace Satiti, son of Manu Samoa and former Counties coach Samuel Satiti, only what, 21 or 22 years old, a young back rower doing terrific things, and blindside flanker as well, Finau. Has been good. By comparison, the Blues, well, history will tell you that the team with the best attack in Super Rugby competition has won the title something like 74% of the time over the course of its history. And the Blues are well and truly going into the final with the best attack on the competition. They have put some big scores up in 2024, and all they need is quick ball, a little bit of dominance up front, and they can tear teams apart. Everybody's expecting a tremendous crowd as well this weekend, and I think that this year's Super Rugby, Dale, deserves a big crowd. I think the quality of the footy that has been played and what we've seen over the course of 2024 has been terrific, but a lot of the time it hasn't been reflected in the crowds that have turned up to support the teams. But I suspect that a final in Auckland at Eden Park against an informed Blues team playing the informed Chiefs team. It's only an hour and a half up the road. There'll be huge support coming out of the Tainui as well. So I wish both teams all the very best in the final on Saturday. Looking forward to a great match.
Tēnā koe, let's go to the Mount Smart Stadium on Saturday night. I was lucky enough to be sharing the experience with Tauira Niko, and there was a big mob of ex-players from Melbourne, and Tauira's held in such high regard there. he said it was pretty testing too, because the boys like a bit of a drink, and T's not drinking so much nowadays, he says. But again, a reminder of just what a crack outfit they are, down 14-0 and then able to come back and dominate and control the game. And an interesting stat now is emerging as far as some guys writing that it's been 16 straight wins, 3,262 days and counting since the Warriors have beaten Melbourne Storm. What did you make of the effort? It just seemed that, well, they were too good. And Jahrome Hughes, another Wellingtonian, carved us up in a big way.
Yeah, well, I don't think that any other team in the NRL who they've bet the Penrith are going close now would match the Melbourne Storm for grit, for resilience, for composure under supreme adversity, so to speak. Their off-season and pre-season regime of physical training, and Craig Bellamy's absolute belief that taking players to the brink at every possible opportunity during the early stages of their professional development, when they come into the first grade system, being able to defend for long periods of time. I know that they train like that as well, that they would train anywhere between 15 and 30 sets without the ball to try to maintain their enthusiasm on the defence line, try to stick to their task away from the training field. Craig Bellamy is not a big believer in the players sitting around playing PlayStation. He makes the young players go to work. He makes them have jobs, even though they don't need the money. He makes them get up and go on work sites. He tries to keep them humble, tries to keep them focused. And I know, going back to John Rebo's time and Tara Nichols' time at the Storm, the programs, policies and strategies that they put in place on the field and off the field, not only for the playing staff but for the administration staff, was world-leading in terms of how they set their goals and how they make sure that they do everything possible to have a successful season. So, you know, that mindset is built into their DNA, and we have seen it many, many times over the years. And, you know, they staunchly defend their try line. And if there's anything that the Warriors or anything that other NRL teams that haven't achieved the heights of success that the Melbourne Storm have, if there's anything they can learn from that, is that grit and that resilience and that uncompromising commitment to excellence every time they take the field, be it at training, be it going to jobs on work sites, or be it standing out there in the defensive line defending a team that's just been given four sets of six in a row. And as you quite rightly point out, to come back from 14-0 deficit against the Warriors, who we know on their day, and in spite of up and down performances, on their day are one of the toughest teams in the competition to deal with, especially when you're 14-0 up. But they found a way to do that. And if anything, the Storm have signalled that they're going to be a contender again in 2024.
What about this fullback that they've unearthed? Locally grown talent, came up through the Victorian Rugby League, scored two tries against us. I mean, let's be real. I mean, Papanasan wasn't in there, nor was Munster. But his ability to mould players to fill spots when vacancies occur is just mind-blowing, what Bellamy's been able to do across the years. But the fullback there, geez, he's a sparkling kid. He's got beautiful foot and step and pace, got all the attributes needed. So another young gun for the Storm to hold him in good stead going forward, Ken.
Yes, exactly. And you put that in the category of nobody had heard of Billy Slater, who was an apprentice jockey brought down from Brisbane by Craig Bellamy. And then when he finished in the game, what are they going to do? And this kid Peppinghausen, who had been on the fringe, and he comes into the mix. And then Peppinghausen, you know, he's had his injury worries over the last couple of years. And then this kid Siwa Falongo comes into the system, who's been there as a junior. You know, and Craig Bellamy is really committed They're trying to put in place an academy program and development programs in Melbourne, and it's had its challenging issues for him as well, particularly with the huge role that AFL and football have in sports mad Melbourne. But an absolute excitement machine. And also, Dale, we can put Cameron Munster in exactly the same category, you know, given he's established now as one of the top players in the world. Nobody had heard of him when he first ran out for 20s in the Melbourne system, brought through, and it's scary to think from a Melbourne point of view that out of Cameron Munster, Ryan Pepperhausen and Siwa Fa'alongo, there's probably only going to be positions in the starting lineup for two of them. So keeps everybody under pressure, and I think if anything, he'll be very, very pleased that Fa'alongo came through such a tough test from 14-0 down to be part of a very strong win for Melbourne on the weekend.
Yeah, no, I have to make comment too, the most disappointing World Cup T20 that we can recall from our home team, who normally plays above themselves in international cricket, but this time around found out, lost to Afghanistan, in fact, two games and gone.
Yes, exactly, and some criticism of the coach as well, playing the B team in game one, and a game that they thought they would win, they ended up losing, been on the back foot ever since, and now they're on the way home. So, those Pākehās that play cricket need to sharpen their pencil down.
Yeah, I guess they do. Thanks very much for that description. What about this intimate look at Razor that Sky have got? I mean, Netflix is having an impact on numbers that are attending Formula One, certainly in the United States. And this sort of, I wouldn't say an expose, but an intimate look at the life of one of our most prominent athletes, now coaches, does let you into his personal thinking a little more than most. It's been a very guarded sort of area, rugby in New Zealand, when you consider that international sports sometimes, I look on the grid of superbikes, they're interviewing blokes just as they jump onto these bikes to race around the world. The car or motor racing scene has interviews with their helmets on and guys just awaiting the green light to get going. They've almost been untouchable from Thursday, if it's a Saturday game, the All Blacks. And now this intimate look at the life of the All Black coach, a little bit of a departure from the norm. What do you make of it?
Yeah, well, he's not under any pressure at the moment as All Black coach. So he's in the honeymoon period. He's got 53 tests ahead of him in the next 4 years. And he comes into the role of the most successful coach in the professional era and the best coach ever in Super Rugby. 7 consecutive titles is testament to that. He won 4 NPC titles. He's won a World Under 20 title as well. So he has enjoyed phenomenal success. The challenge for that expose of him is going to be finding new material that people don't know much about, but he's charismatic, he's iconic, he's hugely successful, sits on a 90%+ win-loss record across the course of his brilliant coaching career, but his greatest challenges now lie in front of him over the next 4 years, and the departure of very, very high-profile players in recent years is not going to help either. In particular, the retirement of Sam Whitelock and at this stage the unavailability of Richie Mo'unga. And to give you some context of that, they were absolutely the two leaders and absolutely the key to the Crusaders' success under his coaching. Sam Whitelock initially at one point appointed as captain by Scott Robertson, and of course Richie Mo'unga wore that number 10 jersey in all 7 of their Super Rugby final wins, and they had something like a 92% win record when Richie Mo'unga was on the field. He has neither of those two players in his All Black team, so this is going to be a new experience for him as well. Scott Barrett likely is going to be named the captain. Sam Kane has already indicated that he's out at the end of 2024, But you are right about the access to the All Blacks. There's been huge criticism about the fun police that have kept mainstream media away, trying to make out that they're a lot bigger personalities and more important than they really are, when in actual fact they're just footy players. And you put that in contrast with Andrew Johns after Latrell Mitchell's stunning game on the weekend. Andrew Johns walking in with a television camera in his role as a presenter for Channel 9. It goes, mate, are you going to play State of Origin? Straight away, that's what the question on everybody's mind, you know, and Joey's saying to him, the state needs you, mate, and Latrell laughing it off, and the boys shaking hands, and just the access and the spontaneity. Latrell, of course, avoided the question because the team had to be formally announced, but clearly he already knew that he was going to be selected. But it was just so appropriate that everybody wanted to talk about Latrell Mitchell. He'd had a great game. And one of the immortals, Joey Johns, straight into the dressing room. You know, he's got no jersey on. Both of the boys having a laugh, and the access and the immediacy. I thought it was fantastic television, something that the All Blacks can learn from.
Tenakwe, what do you make of that? He hasn't been in the squad now for 3 years. He was omitted, which he might have taken as a personal slight. And now when Maguire needs him back, and he has been in some decent form, so that certainly is warranted. But do you think some might be a bit ho-hum about this? Because, you know, if you're going to overlook me a few weeks ago and now you want me to come on in and do my best, maybe you should have had more faith in me from the beginning. Do you think that will be playing on his mind at all, or is he professional enough to just say, hey, here's another chance, I'll do my best?
I thought that Joey Johns absolutely summed it up with his off-the-cuff comment to Latrell. I don't know, Dale, whether you saw the interview or not, but he said to Latrell, he goes, mate, the state needs you. And Latrell looked at him and they smiled, and they do. You know, Swali'i, Latrell Mitchell, Stephen Crichton, there's no debate. They are the best three centres in New South Wales. Swali'i, well, he was only there for 7 minutes, as we all know. And the interest in this game in Melbourne, the interest in the interest in the series, what it's going to do for the confidence of the New South Wales State of Origin team when Latrell walks in. Everybody loves him. Everybody knows how good he is. He's a controversial figure. We all know that. But he is absolutely one of the premier players in the game. And I think this year's State of Origin series absolutely has been given a shot in the arm and energy and enthusiasm with the announcement yesterday that he's going to be in the team for Game 2.
Tenakwe, are you tiring of State of Origin? You know, every dog has its day. It's been going 30, maybe, when was it, 80? In the 80s it started. So it's been going 30 years or 40. But, you know, they seem to promote it as some sort of false war. Yeah, back in the day, people used to have a bang at each other, but not now. They're only pushing and shoving for the most part. New South Wales people actually don't hate Queenslanders, I would not think, but they to market it, they sort of pump it up as though there's this huge rivalry. In fact, they try to paint it as a hatred of each other. Is that starting to wear thin?
Well, it's not reflected in the television audience, which is growing, and it's certainly not reflected in the ticket sales, with a massive crowd in Sydney, a sellout next week in Melbourne. And, of course, the Suncorp game is also already sold out. So the storylines are the same, but the interest is compelling. You know, the eyeballs and the attendance confirm that it's still relevant. Who knew when the concept was born 30 years ago that it would still be what it is today? You know, and the questions obviously that were asked at the end of 2023 after the Kiwis' dominant performance over Australia was that does that mean that the State of Origin series is now second rate, and that Australia playing New Zealand at international level has got more of an interest because New Zealand is so dominant? Well, we haven't seen any evidence of this so far after Game 1 in this year's series, but I think certainly people see the opportunity for Indigenous, All-Star, Samoa, Tonga, Fiji, Papua New Guinea, and, of course, Australia and New Zealand, plus an Indigenous side even for, you know, so I think times are changing as well. Expectations are training, the welcome to country is a very nice tip to the Indigenous people, but is that going to be enough to whet the appetite of Indigenous communities when it comes to recognition and representation from a rugby league perspective? I think, Dale, that it won't be. And at some point, we're going to see the birth of an Australian Indigenous team playing more games of significance on the international stage than we have in the past. And I think that Latrell Mitchell is going to be one of the champions of that in the future as well. I have no doubt about that. His commitment to his people, his culture, his family has always been a reflection of that. And I look forward to that. You know, I think that's going to be the next adjunct in our game, and I can't, in my view, it can't come soon enough.
Kia ora. I took all that thinking too, Ken. Thanks for an extended kōrero today. Really enjoyed it too, and I hope our peeps listening in did as well. Thanks so much, te rangatira. Ngā mihi.
Kia ora, Brent.
Kia ora. Ken Laban. Awesome dude, awesome man.